how can we resolve structure within quasars? Until now, that's proven very difficult because quasars are so very distant that they appear point-like to even the world's most powerful telescopes. Professor Andy Lawrence of the University of Edinburgh, however, believes that he might have stumbled, rather by accident, upon a technique that could allow him to do exactly that. When I spoke to him, I started by asking him what he had been trying to do when he stumbled on his discovery.
Well, we were monitoring millions of galaxies to look for things that went bang. We were using a big telescope in Hawaii called Pan-STARRS, which is a quite big telescope with a very wide field of view. And when we caught something going bang, we've been tracking its behavior with the Liverpool telescope, which is a robotic telescope. So our idea, we thought there would be things going bang due to shredding of stars passing close to black holes in the centers of apparently otherwise dull galaxies. It looks like, no, we found a handful of those events, but we found a whole more of something we were not expecting. Those star shredding events should last a few months. They should look extremely hot. They might not have the regular emission lines of a quasar that you'd normally get around a black hole. Whereas instead, the things we were finding looked like normal quasars, except they'd got a factor of 10, 30 or 100 brighter compared to 10 years ago. And they were either still rising or slowly fading on a timescale of years rather than months.
And I think the mystery thickened when you tried to estimate the distances to these objects.
It did indeed. This was a bit of a shock. So when we get the spectrum of the quasar that's flaring now, we have a quite accurate distance from the redshift in a classic cosmological manner. For the galaxy, the dull, boring galaxy that was there before this thing went bang, we can estimate its distance by looking at its colours. That's something known as a photometric redshift. That, in fact, was already done by the Sloan Digital Sky Survey team, and their photometric redshift estimates were nearly always smaller than the redshifts we measured with the quasar. So at the moment, the only sensible reason we can think of for that, well, it might just be that those photometric redshifts are wrong for some reason we haven't spotted yet, but it looks unlikely.
So the mystery here is that these quasars seem to be much more distant than the galaxies that they appear to be in.
Exactly so. So I think the reason is probably because what we thought was the host galaxy of the quasar is not the host galaxy at all. It's a completely separate galaxy that happens to be in the same line of sight. In other words, we've got a very distant quasar in the background, and in the foreground, we've got some tiddly little galaxy that happens to be in the way. So the light from the quasar is passing through, and something is happening. So we think what's going on is lensing, not gravitational lensing. So focusing of the light by gravity would makes it temporarily brighter.
So that's where you see these arc-like patterns on the sky of light which has gone through this lens of dark matter around a galaxy.
That's right. Gravitational lensing is quite well known through giant clusters of galaxies making those arcs, as you say. And also a handful of quasars have double or quadruple images where the galaxy potential is bending the light. This is something else. We think it's not that. That wouldn't produce a big enough effect. This is lensing by a single star, which happens to be in the foreground galaxy. It's very similar to what stellar astronomers and exoplanet hunters have been studying for years inside our own galaxy. So this is a well-known phenomenon, but it's the first time we've seen it happening in the extragalactic universe.
The alignment for that must have to be terribly correct for this star in this galaxy to be exactly in the line of sight to this quasar. It seems very coincidental that you found so many objects in this precise configuration.
Well, indeed, it's extremely unlikely, but then you have to remember that we were looking at millions of galaxies. Over the whole sky, in fact, there's something like 100 million galaxies of the right kind of brightness that could potentially be in front of a background AGN. And then when the galaxy's in front, you still, most of the time, there isn't a star which is exactly aligned. But a few back-of-the-envelope calculations, you find that there's about a 1 in a million chance at any one time that this is happening. But a 1 in a million compared to 100 million galaxies, that's 100 of them right now going bang over the sky. So I think that's what we're looking at. It's an extremely rare event, but it's going on all the time just because there are so many chances for it to happen. So an interesting example of statistics in action.
And what can you learn by looking at these objects in this configuration?
The main thing we can learn is possibly the structure of the quasar. The lensing effect by the star, the bending of the light, you can imagine a little circle around the star, and if the light passes within that circle, you get this bending effect. And if you compare that size to the expected size of the quasar in the background, the angular size, as it were, on the sky, to a first approximation, the quasar is a point source. It's smaller than the lens. But actually, depending on precisely how big a black hole it is and how big the star is, in many cases, they may in fact be comparable. And then you can measure the structure of the quasar. For instance, so in the accretion disk, the blue light should be near the middle and should be very compact, and the red light from the accretion disk should be rather bigger. So the blue light looks like a point source, and you get a kind of peaky light curve as it passes across. The red light gets sort of slightly washed out as it moves across the lens. So we should see colour changes over the lifetime of the event, and that can tell us whether accretion disk models are correct and potentially even kind of, you know, map out the shape of the quasar.
So as this star is moving across in front of this quasar, it's sweeping out along a line in front of that quasar and giving you an indication of the brightness of the quasar along that line.
Exactly so, yes. So you can think of it as the lens is being, it's like a magnifying glass. So you're scanning the magnifying glass across the quasar, but the quasar is not a single thing. It's got some sort of structure. So as you pass the magnifying glass across the centre of the accretion disk or across the outer part of the accretion disk or the region where the emission line clouds are, they may well all give a slightly different result.
And I guess this is one of the first times we've really been able to test our theories of what the environment is like very close into these quasars.
Indeed, usually when people do this, they have to do it in a very indirect way. So this may be one of the most direct tests, the only way we can actually resolve the structure of a quasar by using this magnifying glass effect. That's the hope. So right now, having discovered these objects, we're trying to get lots more data, first of all, to decide whether the microlensing idea is correct, and that, you know, still needs proving. My hunch is it probably is the right answer, but we're not sure yet. And if it is correct, then we need a lot of data to try and track these changes and see if we can deduce the structure of a quasar.
Professor Andy Lawrence from the University of Edinburgh. That's all for this month's Naked Astronomy, but as always, you can find out more on our website at thenakedscientist.com/astronomy, including many more interviews from NAM in the daily podcast that I put out in the first week of July. Next month, we'll be taking more of your astronomy questions, so if you've got anything you'd like us to tackle, you can send a tweet at Naked Scientists or send an email to astronomy@thenakedscientist.com. Naked Astronomy was produced this month by me, Dominic Ford, in St Andrews, ably assisted in Cambridge by Kate Lamble. It comes to you from Cambridge University with support from the Royal Astronomical Society and the Science and Technology Facilities Council.